lights go down and the clock ticks close to the witching hour. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. Enter at your own risk into the paranormal.
Yeah, we're pulling back the curtain or peeling back the curtain to reveal that there is more than meets the eye. Could it be that the Nazis did not really lose World War II, that they made it appear that way in order to divert attention from the alliance between the Fourth Reich and the race of aliens known as reptilians? As a big question mark right there. Well, after the German surrender in 1945, the Nazi Reptilian Alliance infiltrated the U.S. military-industrial complex through Operation Paperclip, removing their political opponents such as the Kennedys, and moved into policy-making positions in the post-war America, infiltrating aerospace companies, banks, media, and the U.S. government, including NASA and the CIA, but their real target was not the United States, it was the solar system. Here to share his research on the Dark Fleet is Len Kasten, a UFO researcher and freelance writer with a BA degree from Cornell University, where he majored in psychology and minored in literature and philosophy. While in the Air Force, he experienced a UFO encounter that had a transformative effect on his life. On frequent trips to Virginia Beach, he spent a lot of time in the extensive New Age Library at the Association for Research and Enlightenment, the organization founded by psychic Edgar Cayce, where he acquired a self-education in metaphysics. He was later introduced to theosophy and joined the Boston Theosophical Society. While working in Washington, D.C. in the 1960s, he felt drawn to join the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, or NICAP for short, the most prestigious organization in the country investigating UFO phenomena. Len later joined the American Philosopher's Society and is now its president following the death of founder Cyril Benton. He's the former editor of an early New Age publication as well called Metamorphosis Magazine and has written several books. His latest is Dark Fleet, the Secret Nazi Space Program, and the Battle for the Solar System. Good evening, Len Kasten. Welcome back to Into the Paranormal. Certainly an honor to have you here.
Hi, Jeremy. Nice to be with you.
Absolutely. So let's dive right in. We mentioned Operation Paperclip, and if we want to start there, there's a lot of documents on Operation Paperclip, are there not?
Oh, yeah, plenty of documents on that. Absolutely.
Tell us about the program, if you wouldn't mind. I understand it involved more than 1,600 German scientists, engineers, and technicians. Wernher von Braun, who, of course, is notorious in the UFO scene, and it was a massive secret program.
Basically, their Nazi histories were scrubbed from their records because Truman didn't want any ex-Nazis didn't want associating with any ex-Nazis, but so they had to change their records, and they were all top German scientists, and they wanted to actually take over this country. That was their plan eventually. And they succeeded.
When did they succeed?
Well, I think the success was actually the defining point of the success was 1960, when Wernher von Braun took over NASA. That was basically their total victory at that point, because you may know that von Braun was an ex-Nazi colonel. I don't know if you know that or not.
I don't think that is widely known. Many people don't know that.
Oh, really? He was, you know, he was involved with all of the attacks on London, the B-2 and the B-1, B-2 rockets from Peenemünde. He was behind that.
On the CIA website, it says Operation Paperclip was the secret intelligence program to bring Nazi scientists to America. So, if we're bringing Nazi scientists to America, for what purpose, Len?
Well, we were open to bringing ex-Germans to America, but not Nazis. Truman did not want any ex-Nazis here. But they changed their records and got by the barrier, and they were not known. They were not known. Their Nazi history was not known. We knew there were top scientists in Germany, but we didn't know which ones were Nazis and which ones weren't.
This war, literally for ultimate control, played out over how long?
Well, it played out over perhaps 20 years. It was really a major operation. The purpose was that we had people here who were sympathy to the Nazi cause. We had Alan Dulles and we had his brother John Foster Dulles. Alan Dulles was a known Nazi sympathizer and he was the head of the CIA. So he was in a key position to bring them over. The Dulles brothers took over the government because Eisenhower really had no political experience, and they were able to get whatever they wanted to done. They could hoodwink Ike very easily.
Did Germany and the U.S. cooperate in Operation Paperclip?
Yeah, of course. We had people scouring Germany after the war for some of the scientists because we wanted them to help in the Cold War at that time. And so we had people all over Germany, and we brought them here. And they, of course, for them, it was an absolute amazing opportunity to get where things were civilized as opposed to being captured by Russia, where they would have been probably cracking rocks in the Ukraine or somewhere. So people like von Braun wanted to come here. This was their destination.
And they would come here in temporary custody of the U.S. military?
Yes, U.S. military.
Kind of like a visa.
Yeah, exactly. And they would find jobs in American aerospace industry and American universities. And little by little, they took over because they had amazing technology that they had already achieved space travel already.
Len Kasten is with us. He is author of Dark Fleet, and we'll continue right after this.
Miss the show live? Listen to it anytime, as many times as you'd like, at parupnormalradio.com. Got Skype? Connect with us by searching ITP51 and click in. Or call toll-free 855-790-8255.
We've planted the seed for our conversation tonight on the Dark Fleet with Len Kasten. I'm Jeremy Scott. Bit by bit, Nazi scientists and engineers, technicians by the thousands in Operation Paperclip in the late 40s and 50s, brought here to the United States, permission of the U.S. military. And then they get here to America and they start one by one taking over major sectors, right, Len? You mentioned universities, aerospace, and it just grows from there.
Exactly. That's right. That's what happened. You have to understand that at that point, the Nazis already had a colony in Antarctica, which they started in 1938, before the war even started, where they had some very high technology, and they were already doing space travel from there. So that was one of the things they had going on. And then they had Operation Paperclip on this side.
So the Nazis were several decades ahead of us in the technological war.
Yes, because they had an alliance with the reptilians, which was made by Hitler in 1933. And actually, it was the reptilians that brought them to Antarctica to start with and helped them start their colony in Antarctica.
So how did the Nazis hook up with the reptilians then?
It was an arrangement between Hitler and the reptilians in 1933. They helped put him in power.
So the reptilians put Hitler in power, and then he returned the favor. Basically, I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back. You know, he owed him something for getting him elected, and so he helped with this alliance and building this
colony. It was all part of the reptilian agenda. They were using Germany to accomplish their goals, which were to take over the planet. And so it was in their interests to ally with somebody like Hitler, who was a madman, actually, totally mad, and use him to achieve their goals.
What was in it for Hitler?
Well, total power. Total power. He viewed himself as a future emperor of the world. And the reptilians were okay with that alliance for a while, until he started to do crazy things in 1943. And in 1943, they dropped him like a hot potato. That was about the time of Stalingrad.
How were the Nazis accomplishing space travel back in 1938 from their colony in Antarctica?
Well, the colony in Antarctica was part of a reptilian base already. They helped the Germans get set up there. They had huge caverns under the ice, and they hollowed out some others and built a high-tech colony in Antarctica. And don't forget, they started this in 1938, which was a year before World War II began. Just imagine coming 6,000 miles across the Atlantic with a ship full of high specialists and scientists and originating a colony under the ice in Antarctica. They were able to do that. And I cover that in my book.
In great detail. And by the way, I highly recommend it. I finished it about 2.5 weeks ago, and it's here on my bookshelf right next to Alien World Order, by the way.
Oh, great. Okay.
So as far as how these ships were able to propel themselves throughout the airspace, we've already established that they had to have had some sort of superior technology. Do we know what that was?
They had anti-gravity technology, absolutely. They had it, and they also had technology that would allow them to travel through portals and through wormholes.
And was this technology on loan?
The reptilians helped them develop this at first in Germany. The first flying saucers were built in Germany, actually in Czechoslovakia, which Germany was occupying at the time. And then it was moved here when the war was lost. They moved the entire technology here to Antarctica.
What is the significance of Antarctica?
Well, you know, people don't realize how much that there's actually an ancient civilization there, going back many, many thousands of years. There were abandoned cities under the ice there, and the reptilians helped them settle in those old abandoned ruins and start their own colony, because they actually had warm water lakes down there. So the Germans were willing to venture there and to set up a colony there, side by side with their reptilian buddies.
How long did it take them to establish this dark fleet from the time they first colonized there?
Well, they had it ready and waiting more or less by 1946 and 47, because they were building the flying saucers in Czechoslovakia in the late 30s and into the 40s. Then when they got to Antarctica, they more or less perfected it by 1946. So that when Admiral Byrd and his fleet went down there to destroy the Nazi base, which Eisenhower knew about, the flying saucers came out of the water and defeated his operation. And Byrd had to go back to the U.S. in defeat after only 2 months. They lost about 6,800. They went down with 6,800 Marines and an armada of 13 ships, including an aircraft carrier. And the flying saucers took over and defeated the whole fleet. And Byrd had to turn around and come back.
And so you said 46, 47. That would put it within 10 years they're able to achieve this.
That's right. But they had a head start in Czechoslovakia. They brought their technology from Czechoslovakia, which was occupied by Germany. And the key to that was General Hans Kammler, who was a specialist in alien technology. He came to Antarctica in 1945, and they had 36,000 slaves that they had accumulated during World War II. They brought those to Antarctica as well. And the entire German Nazi technical unit came to Antarctica, 6,000 scientists. So they had a complete operation in place, and then Kammler came and took over, General Kammler. And that's why they were ready for us when Operation High Jump started in late 46.
Is there a reason they left Czechoslovakia?
Yeah. Well, they lost World War II. I mean, militarily, they lost the war. But by that time, the colony in Antarctica was well developed.
So it was to their advantage to move everything that they had and, you know, start over from that point in Antarctica.
Yeah, we were putting them on trial in Nuremberg and hanging them at that point. Goring and the whole crowd, but Kammler got away. And he was the key guy. He knew all about the alien technology. He knew about flying saucer technology. And he was a scientist. He was an engineer. And when he got to Antarctica, they were able to put the whole thing together there.
How many vehicles were in this fleet, Len?
What, in High Jump? Operation High Jump?
Yes.
13 ships, including an aircraft carrier, two planes, destroyers. The purpose of that trip, Operation High Jump, was to destroy the Nazi base, which we knew about. The British had more or less scouted the whole place. They knew it existed. And Truman was determined to wipe it out.
And I'll ask you how successful we were in that when we come back with Len Kasten talking about Dark Fleet. I'm Jeremy Scott. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, Paranormal News with Brad Bernards is next.
Have you been to the new Paranormal store? Find all sorts of swag at ParanormalRadio.com.
Abnormal News, I'm Brad Bernards. There's been a lot of talk in recent days on social media regarding the approach of a new comet that could possibly evolve into a spectacular sight in the coming weeks ahead. According to Space.com, the comet has been christened ATLAS, which is an acronym for Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System, a robotic astronomical survey and early warning system based in Hawaii. But besides finding asteroids, ATLAS has also found more than a half dozen comets. The one that everyone is currently interested in is classified as C2019Y4. When first sighted on December 28th, the comet was an exceedingly faint object, but in the days and weeks that followed, it brightened at an incredibly rapid pace. Then, for all intents and purposes, Comet ATLAS hit a wall on March 17th. Ever since that time, the comet's incredible rise in brightness has dramatically slowed. As of April 1st, many have had difficulty in seeing it because its head, or coma, is so large, roughly one-third the apparent size of the moon. Consequently, the comet's brightness is spread out over a large area, giving it a ghostly appearance. NASA just gave out a new round of grants, one of which is a plan to fit a 1 kilometer radio telescope inside a crater on the far side of the moon, according to ScienceAlert.com. The Lunar Crater Radio Telescope, or LCRT, would be able to measure wavelengths and frequencies that can't be detected from Earth. Should the plans for the LCRT become a reality, and the new grant money could get it closer to that, it would be the largest filled aperture radio telescope in the solar system. This is still at the very early stage of planning, and it's not clear yet exactly which crater would be used for the job. Connect with the news at ParanormalRadio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Paranormal News.
Blood-sucking lizard people disguised as humans who secretly rule the world.
Reptilians come to Earth to infiltrate the human race.
The greatest form of control is where you think you're free, when you're being fundamentally manipulated and dictated to.
Reptilians.
Jeremy will hold a spot in line just for you. Call 855-790-8255 or Skype ITP51.
Oh, yeah, we're talking lizard people tonight. It's an infiltration. I'm Jeremy Scott with Len Kasten. He's author of Dark Fleet. Right before the break, we were talking about Operation High Jump and about what it was all about, which, of course, we know was to destroy the Nazi base that started to colonize in Antarctica in 1938, transplanted from Czechoslovakia. And Truman was the president at the time. Len was telling us that that he wanted this base wiped out. Why did he want it wiped out? Why did it need to be wiped out?
Well, we didn't want the Nazi technology to continue after the war. Both the British and us together wanted to wipe out any Nazi colonies that were left because we knew they had high technology, and we knew they had actually knew already that they had achieved space travel. Their first trip to the moon was in 1942 from Germany. They landed on the moon in 1942. Yeah. So. They already had that technology, and they transplanted it to Antarctica before the war was over.
You know, you mentioned the 13 vehicles, but they also had 33 aircraft as well and about 4,700 boots on the ground. How successful was Operation High Jump?
They had an aircraft carrier. We don't know how many planes they actually had.
Okay.
But they had 6,800 Marines, and it was actually an international fleet. It wasn't just American. The purpose was to destroy the Nazi base in Antarctica, and they failed.
Did we lose lives?
Yes. I think, I don't know how many Marines were killed, but it was quite a large number of Marines, and they destroyed one or two ships. There was no way they could contend against flying saucers.
They destroyed our ships.
Yes. Yes, they did. So Admiral Byrd had no choice but to head back home.
Was there ever any talk about why this mission was not successful, that what we were going up against was literally a superior race?
It was superior technology. It wasn't a superior race.
Well, I consider them a superior race if they, you know, when we fight them, we lose 9 times out of 10. That means they're a superior race to me.
We were dealing with alien technology. We were talking about reptilian technology that they had given to the Nazis. So,
which means you can't win against that.
No, they had tremendous technology, and so when Truman realized what was going on in Antarctica, he realized that we had to do something about it. But he didn't know what we could do. We didn't have the technology to deal with it at that point. And just to drive that point home, the Nazis sent a fleet of UFOs over to the U.S. over Washington, D.C. in 1952. You may recall that famous case of the UFOs over Washington, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the most famous in history. I actually have it referenced in a couple of books here in the library.
Right. It was photographed, too, the lights in the sky. Well, those were German UFOs from Antarctica. They were telling us basically, hey, here we are. We're right over Washington, D.C. Don't mess with us again. That's what that was. That was a warning.
What would be the result if we did not heed that warning and we continued to engage? What do you think, Len?
We didn't have any anti-gravity aircraft at all. We couldn't engage. The flying saucers were much more superior to anything we had. The technology was amazing. And they had perfected it there in Antarctica. And they were already flying to the moon and Mars.
And you mentioned the moon, 1942, Germany, their first trip there. Was there already a base on the moon at that time, or was that the trip to a break
ground?
That
was the first trip. That was the first trip. The one in 1942.
That was the groundbreaking trip.
Yes, from there they started building a colony there.
And how long did that take?
Well, it didn't take very long because in 1945 they had their first trip to Mars, and they started a colony on Mars only 3 years later. So already, even though the war on Earth was over for them, They already had colonies on the moon and Mars.
And so was the thinking that they were vulnerable being there in Antarctica or in Czechoslovakia that they needed to get off of this planet?
Well, Germany was already in ashes. We had bombed it to oblivion. There wasn't anything left to Germany anymore. So there was nothing there, and they had surrendered. The Germans had surrendered. The Nazis never did surrender. It was basically the Nazis that founded the base in Antarctica. And they brought with them a lot of their German – all the German scientists came to Antarctica. And many of them came to the U.S. via Operation Paperclip.
Did they ever abandon the base in Antarctica?
No, they never did. They built it up. And eventually it became international. When we realized what they had down there and what the kind of technology they had, we knew they were going to the moon and Mars. Our aerospace people joined in with them. And that's how they started to take over the U.S. was through that arrangement. Our top banking people, political people realized, despite the fact that Truman was dead set against it, they were able to arrange a U.S.-German scientific arrangement, and let many of our scientists and aerospace people went to Antarctica.
Dark Fleet, the name of the book. Len Kasten, my guest. I'm Jeremy Scott. We'll be right back.
Show your support of Into the Paranormal by buying from the Paranormal Store at ParanormalRadio.com. Making America weird again, one show at a time. You're traveling into the paranormal. Jeremy Scott.
With Len Kasten, we're talking about Dark Fleet, which is the name of his book. Highly recommended. The Secret Nazi Space Program and the Battle for the Solar System. So, Len, back to the topic here. The Nazis formed an alliance with the reptilians, and the Germans surrendered in 1945. The alliance started to infiltrate the military-industrial complex. What were some of their first moves?
Well, getting tied in with our aerospace industry was a big part of it, because our scientists realized they had superior technology and they wanted part of it. They knew they were on the moon. We knew they were on Mars, and we already had Nazi sympathizers in our business community, the Dulles brothers, Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles. John Foster Dulles was our Secretary of State, and his brother Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA. And the CIA was bringing over all the ex-Nazi spies and putting them to work here in the CIA. So they were taking over step by step. And Eisenhower was aware of it, but there was nothing he could do about it because the business community was too powerful. And he had to sit by and watch it happen.
And so within about 12 years or so of this alliance being formed, they're starting to build the colony up on Mars. That's when the first trip happens in 1945. Explain how this Dark Fleet worked. Was it a round trip between Antarctica and the moon and Mars, or were there some extra stops along the way?
Well, no, their main base was in Antarctica. They called it Base 211. And it was built up, and it was very highly sophisticated. It was like our Silicon Valley, actually. And it's a lot of space under the ice there. It's a very large colony. Actually, the weather is actually mild under there, and there's fresh water, and it's ideal, really. And there were several ancient civilizations that had come and gone already down there. So that was their first space community, was Base 211. And it was from there that they settled on the moon in 1942, started burrowing underground and building an underground base there, and then Mars in 1945.
Yeah, and I'm still just in awe over that picture that you have of Base 211 there in Antarctica. Just mesmerizing to look at.
It's amazing. The German scientists and engineers are incredible, actually. And once they get started on something, they bring all their resources to bear. They're amazing what they can do.
So how many vehicles in this fleet were stored there at Base 211?
Well, they were building flying saucers under there. I don't know how many. You mean how many had they built? I don't know, but by 1952, they obviously had a large fleet because they flew over Washington, D.C. And I think they were in that flyover in 1952. I believe there were maybe 20 or so, even more, craft flying over Washington. We chased, one of our pilots chased one of them, and he died. He kept climbing after trying to get close to it, and he went all the way up and ran out of oxygen and crashed. That was Mantell. His name was Captain Mantell.
Yeah, I remember that one. So basically, he was chased up so high into the atmosphere that he couldn't survive.
That's right. That's what happened.
Yeah, that detail from your book even sticks with me as I recall right now. General Kommler, he kind of just disappeared and was never seen from again. Is that correct?
The last time we had any sighting of him was in April of 1945, and he carried out a few acts. One of the things, the first thing he did was to destroy the missile base in Peenemünde, so that we wouldn't get our hands on it when we got there. That was the last act that he committed as part of the German. The part of the Nazi presence in Czechoslovakia. And then he was gone. He had gone on a submarine and gone to Antarctica. When he got to Antarctica, he had a colony already waiting for him with 36,000 slaves that Himmler had already brought over, and 6,000 German scientists were already there. And when he came there, then everything was set up for him. And that's why he was able to defeat the American fleet in 1946 with his flying saucers.
He brought them in on the so-called, what were described as, milk cow submarines.
The milk cow submarines were huge submarines. They were almost like freighters, and they could travel the entire distance of the Atlantic underwater. They were amazing technology.
Yeah, it's certainly even for its time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, even for its time. It was way, way ahead. Very advanced concepts.
The workforce, you know, it started with 1,600, 2,000 scientists, but it grew from there. Do we know how many workers were involved in this fleet?
According to Vladimir Terzisky, who has a lot of information, he was a Bulgarian scientist. He got his hands on the information. New Berlin, the city that was built under the ice, by the early 1950s, had a population of over 2 million. It was huge.
And later comes in a meeting with the U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower, and we'll talk about that when we continue with Len Kasten here talking about Dark Fleet after our top-of-the-hour break. Again, his book is Dark Fleet, The Secret Nazi Space Program and the Battle for the Solar System. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I'll be back with Len Kasten as we roll into our second hour right after this.
Are you connected with us on social media? Give us a like and follow at Paranormal Show. No topic too deep for this show, especially when it leads into the paranormal.
Our program tonight, Dark Fleet. Len Kasten is my guest. I'm Jeremy Scott. 1955, there was a meeting that happened between President Dwight D. Eisenhower at Holloman Air Force Base near New Jersey. He believed that he was meeting with aliens from somewhere else in the galaxy, whereas he was actually meeting with these reptilians from these underground bases on Earth. What came out of that meeting, Len?
Okay, I just want to correct something. Holloman Air Force Base was in New Mexico, but not New Jersey.
Oh, did I say New Jersey?
Yeah.
I was looking right at it, too. I do that sometimes. I jump ahead words. Thank you for the correction.
New Jersey has other problems right now.
They do.
Okay.
Touché.
Basically, the deal they wanted to make with Ike was unacceptable to us. They wanted us to give up our technology in return for give up our atomic energy weapons in return for their technology, and Eisenhower had to say no to that. But they think that that arrangement was between the good ETs, not the Nazis. He then made an arrangement with the Nazi-dominated ETs, and that was the one that was so destructive to this day.
Why was it destructive, Len?
Well, they, of course, violated the deal right away. They started abducting people by the thousands. They said they were only going to abduct a few people and study them, and they fooled Ike, and he believed it. And actually, they started abducting people by the thousands, and many of them ended up as slaves on Mars.
What kinds of slaves?
Well, the Germans had a slave colony on Mars.
Was it forced labor? Was it sex? What was it?
Well, they had a huge colony on Mars by 1960 when von Braun took over here. They already had a large colony on Mars, and it was called the ICC, the Intergalactic Corporate Conglomerate, which got to be very large. And the Germans, wherever they go, they employ slave labor. That's their signature.
The abductees were actually used to create hybrids to make this
happen. That's correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and then we're not only slaves, but we're actually traded around, like property.
Well, let's see. They built a very sophisticated scientific community on Mars eventually, and started creating what we call cyborgs. Cyborgs are creatures that are part human and part electronic, and that's what you're talking about, I believe.
Yes.
And they actually had a market going, selling cyborgs all over the solar system, all over the galaxy. They were in demand. They could create an instant army. An alien civilization could create an instant military force by using these cyborgs.
And many people have actually said that they have been trained as super soldiers, and folks who are familiar with the UFO topic are familiar with the MyLab programs as well.
That's right. That's right. And so the super soldier program was originated on Mars, the Nazi community on Mars, and the cybernetics laboratory that they have on Mars. So by the time von Braun took over here, they already had a very sophisticated laboratory on Mars and on the moon.
Tell us about these super soldiers. What was their mission?
Well, you know, they had amazing weaponry already, and they had to train men to use these weapons. And the only way they could do that was by augmenting their mentality and their capabilities, and they could do that. And so they needed super soldiers to augment their military forces on the moon and Mars, actually mainly on Mars, because when they first colonized Mars, they encountered two indigenous populations. There was a population of reptoids there. They were reptilians, but they were not quite the same as the reptilians that were here. And there was a race of insect-like people called insectoids. And so the Nazis had to clear out both of those populations when they started their colony on Mars. Eventually, they wound up using nuclear weapons, believe it or not.
On who?
On those colonies, especially the insect population in the northern quadrant of Mars.
Very interesting.
They had nuclear weapons that just destroy the biological life forces and leave the physical structure intact.
What do you think world leaders would have to say if presented with evidence of the infiltration? And is this something that just happened, you know, decades ago? Or is this infiltration still going on?
Well, you do know about the Illuminati. I discussed that in my book. The Illuminati have a very high percentage of reptilian blood. They're human-looking, but they're really basically alien. And they were also the royalty of Europe, were the Illuminati. And they run everything on this planet. They run the media. They run the banks. They run the drug companies. So they're already in charge. They already are in charge of our society.
Why don't we see them, or are they right there in plain view?
No, they're human. They're human beings. They just have a high percentage of reptilian blood, and some of them can shapeshift. Some of the reptilians can actually shapeshift and appear human if they want to.
Who are some of the people that maybe we might know, David Icke, one of them, that many people say that the person's actually a reptilian?
You mean by name? You're asking me to tell you who they are by name? I would know. I would just say this. If they have a lot of money, they're probably Illuminati, because the Illuminati run the banking system, and they can make anybody rich that they want to, and they can make anybody poor that they want to. So you can put that all together and figure it out.
Yeah.
You don't get anywhere. You just don't get rich on this planet without their help. Let me put it that way.
Okay, so you have to win them over.
They identify you by your DNA. You don't have to win them over. They know who you are. They have very sophisticated genetic testing that they can do, and they make sure that you fall in line, or if you don't fall in line, then they take away all your money. So they run the show. They run the show here. We can have an incredible civilization here with very high technology if the Illuminati were not in charge. Okay, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but can we ever get them out of the picture?
Eventually, yes. Eventually we will.
And how do we do that?
Well, it's a slow process. We have to expand our consciousness. Once we expand our consciousness to a certain point, they're no longer a threat, and they no longer can run the show here. And so that's what it's all about. It's all about consciousness.
Going back to, you know, the infiltration, because one of the things that they did as well is they started to move into these sectors, as I call them, or into government and intelligence agencies. President John F. Kennedy was a threat to their agenda, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was a threat because he would not fall in line, and he was a patriot, and he knew what they were doing. He was aware of what was going on in the CIA. He was aware of what was going on with the FBI, and we know what happened to him.
Yeah, so are we saying that the Illuminati were, or that the reptilians or somebody was directly or indirectly involved with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And Alan Dulles was definitely involved with that. Not only that, but he sat in on the Warren Commission on top of that. So here he is. You know, it was Kennedy who said he's going to break the CIA up into 1,000 pieces. I don't know if you remember reading that. But when he realized what was going on, that was what he decided, that basically the CIA, which was led by Alan Dulles, was at the root of the whole problem. Because Dulles had been bringing over ex-Nazis, scrubbing their records and putting them to work to the CIA. So Kennedy got in the way, and especially when he decided to go to the moon. The last thing that the Nazis wanted was for an American colony, for American colony to go to the moon. They were already there. Okay, so they didn't want any problems on the moon. So they had a lot of reasons for getting rid of them.
Bringing Kennedy and Eisenhower back into play, there was a very telling thing that Eisen said in his farewell speech in 1960. What was that, Len?
Well, he said, I can't quote it directly, but he said that the military industrial complex had gotten so powerful that it was in every aspect of our lives. He couldn't come out and say it. He couldn't come out and tell the exact truth because nobody would have believed him at that point. But he did warn us about what could happen. And it was a strange thing for Eisenhower to say because as an ex-general, he was a great believer in the military. He had many friends in the military, but he had no way of knowing to what extent the Nazis had infiltrated our military-industrial complex, but he was aware of it. And that's why he gave that speech.
Yeah, he certainly was referring to the Nazi influence. You can't really argue that he was referring to anything else.
Exactly. It was very clear. Very clear.
So tell us about these bases. I understand one of them is like 11 stories tall.
The base on the moon, the Nazi base on the moon is called the LOC, or the Lunar Operations Command. And it goes down 11 levels underground on the moon. And it's like a UN. It's like a galactic UN because they entertain aliens from all over the galaxy there. They have a whole hospitality function going on there. And it's all run by the Nazis. You know, they become very civilized. After Hitler died, the German scientists and business people took over. They wanted to get rid of him in 1944 because they knew that how destructive he was, and he wasn't helping them. But Hitler did survive the war. You know that, right?
He did
survive. He ended up in Argentina. And I have that in my other book, Alien World Order. I discussed that in great detail.
The mining and the manufacturing operations on Mars, but also on Ceres. Did they build a base on Ceres as well?
They did. On other moons and other asteroids, yes, they did. They have a mining operation on Ceres. I'm not sure exactly what they're mining, but whatever it is, they're able to sell it throughout the galaxy. And they do. They have huge spacecraft that go all over the galaxy. And Ceres is one of their operations in this solar system. Yes.
You also write about a planet known as Serpo.
Right, I did. That was my second book. You're talking about Secret Journey to Planet Serpo?
Yeah. Is Serpo involved in any of this?
Not with the Nazis. No. The Serpo story is a whole different story. It started with the crash at Roswell. The aliens that crashed at Roswell had nothing to do with the Nazis. They were from a planet in Zeta Reticuli. And after that crash at Roswell, three of them died in that crash, but one of them survived. And that alien that survived at Roswell was wounded a little bit. We brought him back to health. And we sent him to Los Alamos, New Mexico, and he remained alive for 5 more years. And he was the one that set up the trip to Serpo.
You know, I've seen some video, and there's always videos going around that show aircraft dinging in and out of the atmosphere, and, you know, they've been sighted around the moon. Leads me to believe that this dark fleet is still in flight. Is that true?
Absolutely, it's in flight. Yes, it's, they have a tremendous, tremendous armada headquartered on the moon, the Dark Fleet, of advanced spacecraft that can travel throughout the galaxy. They have huge freighters. They have huge spacecraft. Some of them are 2 miles, 3 miles long. And so that exists and has existed for years now. I think if you recall... the movie where we landed on the moon, if you recall that movie.
Actually, I've never seen it.
The one I'm talking about was in 1961, an old movie.
Yeah, well before my time.
Yeah. In any case, the Dark Fleet still exists, and it patrols the solar system alongside their reptilian friends. They travel together, the Draco and the Nazis, our buddy-buddy. And they share technology, and they share a lot of other things. The reptilians also like to enslave people, so they get along very well.
We mentioned that they have superior technology not only in their spaceships so that they can go about their endeavors within the Dark Fleet, but ability to build these bases in Antarctica, on the moon, on Mars, on Ceres. But they also have some other sort of technology. We talked about anti-gravity, but nanotechnology is also another one of those things that they possess.
That's right. Nanotechnology was actually first discovered by an American scientist named Feynman. They have all of the most incredible technology in both the moon, lunar bases and the Mars bases, and nanotechnology is one of them. Nanotechnology became useful when we developed certain microscopes that could see down to that level, to the point where they could start to manipulate molecules and atoms directly. And to get down to that level of microscopes, they had to develop the science of nanotechnology, in which there were 25 million nanometers to 1 inch, if you can picture that. So when you get down to that level, when you get down to the level where you're dealing with molecules directly, all kinds of things become possible.
They also had the ability to do mind control on a massive scale.
That's right. They developed mind control through hypnosis. And of course, that they did that on this planet, and that was brought over to their colonies on the moon and Mars. So when they abduct people now, and they have been for many years, they subject them to mind control, and they control them just like they're robots, just like they're puppets. They can be controlled that way. So they're very sophisticated in that area as well. I think you probably saw the movie, the one where, what's the one I'm thinking about right now? I can't think of it right now. Frank Sinatra was in it way back in the 50s.
That's okay. I'm gonna let you down as far as that is. I let a lot of people down when they ask me, have I seen this movie or seen that movie? I'm getting better in that, but it just wasn't a part of my younger life. I don't know. I was more into books and stuff like that.
I understand. That's quite all right.
Well, Len, take a couple minutes here before we hit our final break to tell folks about your work, some of your other books as well, and then we'll come back and wrap up our conversation.
Okay. My website is alien-secrethistory. Now, I'm not quite finished with it yet. It's under construction, but it's still out there. And what I would recommend, if you go out to the website, by the way, if you have Firefox as a browser, you can't get to it. Now, there are four featured videos on that website, and the one I would recommend at this point concerning Hitler's survival, it would be featured video number four. The first featured video is about Corey Good, and then there's the second one is about the Dark Fleet, and the third one is an interview with somebody named Frank Chile, who's an amazing guy, and the fourth one is the survival of Adolf Hitler. So that's where it stands at the moment. I continue to add to it. I'm building it up slowly.
All right, Len Kasten is my guest, and we'll be back. Dark Fleet tonight. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Into the Paranormal is streaming 24/7 on the TuneIn Radio app and at ParanormalRadio.com.
Parabnormal News. I'm Brad Bernards. A Westmeath, Ireland woman is trying to find the source of a mysterious sound in the skies over the weekend. Hannah Duffy from Moat heard a massive boom on Saturday that she says shook windows and startled wildlife.
It did occur to me that it could have been a sonic boom, but I thought only military aircraft, apart from Concorde, back years ago would have been able to have made a sound like that. And wouldn't it be unheard of in the skies over Ireland either sometimes? But, you know, it was kind of hard to reconcile what it could have been. But another comment came in and said, well, it could be a meteor.
That's courtesy of local radio station Midlands 103. Ms. Duffy says speculation is now rife on social media as to what could have made the unusual sound, with some suggesting it could have been a meteor. A new study conducted by the U.S. Geological Survey revealed the area of the country that will most likely be affected by a powerful solar storm on Earth, as reported by the IB Times. According to the agency, these areas will most likely experience wide-scale power outages due to certain features. Here's Jeffrey J. Love, USGS research geophysicist.
A large magnetic storm can interfere with radio communication, with GPS systems. They can interfere with the operation and orientation of satellites. High-altitude pilots and astronauts can be subjected to enhanced levels of radiation. And there are occasional power blackouts.
Areas where power is most likely to fail due to extreme solar weather include the Denver metropolitan area, the Pacific Northwest, the Atlantic seaboard, and certain Midwestern states near the U.S.-Canada border. Connect with the news at parabnormalradio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
Go down, the strange comes out into the paranormal.
The Nazi reptilian alien infiltration of the U.S. government and the secret space program. My guest tonight is Len Kasten, and he's author of Dark Fleet. 855-790-8255, toll free in North America. That's 855-790-8255. If you're outside North America, it's 503-506-0396. And, of course, on Skype, real easy to get into the program at ITP51. Somebody who couldn't join us on the air tonight was interested in the topic. So let me get the actual reference up here, just so I don't screw it up. Wouldn't want to do that. But it was in regards to the coronavirus. And, you know, we know that there is reptilian blood in some of these Illuminati members. And so the question was along the lines of, with the current coronavirus, are they using, they being, I guess, the reptilians, maybe the Alpha Draconians? Nonetheless, we're talking about a reptoid species. Thoughts on whether or not they're using this COVID-19 pandemic to keep everybody staying at home so that they can continue their invasion, Len?
Well, I really don't think things are going to be the same after this is over. There's going to be some very major changes in our society worldwide. Things are going to change. And I think, you know, the reptilians are really behind all the wars and the other problems that we're having, medical problems that we're having. Because they can control that. They control the medical system. They control the drug, the pharmaceutical companies.
So they can create the virus and they can hold the vaccine.
Exactly. At this point, the vaccine wouldn't do much good anyway, because 60,000 people or at least are going to die anyway, regardless. Vaccine takes about a year to test out and get it working.
Yeah, at least. They also ask, is there any connection to secret space programs, to the Greys?
I think there is a connection, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's going to, you know, a lot of people are very, very suspicious of what's going on here. And it certainly has something to do with the reptilians, but I don't know the exact connection. I'm looking into it and trying to figure it out myself.
Please let us know, Len.
Okay.
Do these reptilians, I'm reading through some questions that have been submitted through the Facebook page, by the way. Also, do these reptilians originate from the Earth sect, or are they working largely with the Alpha Draconians?
Well, they're originally from Draco, but they've been on this planet longer than we have. They came here first. They were here about a million years ago, when they first colonized Lemuria. Then we sent some humans here. They were originally Martians, really, to confront them, and they took over Atlantis, and that's when the wars broke out between the reptilians and the humans. And that's all in my last book, Alien World Order.
Where do the reptilians stand now in terms with fellow alien races?
Well, they still live deep below the surface here. They have a tremendous colony down here, down below the surface, mostly under Tibet, under the Asian continent. They're still here, and they come in and go as they want, through portals, through the poles and through natural portals. And they have their spacecraft under there, and they have a very sophisticated society, highly technical, way down below the surface of the Earth.
Are they the real reason that Trump created the Space Force?
I don't know that connection. I really don't. I don't know whether Trump is an Illuminati or not. There are many theories around about that, because usually people don't get to be very rich unless they are Illuminati. So very possibly he is an Illuminati. And if he is, then he would have no interest in battling the reptilians or trying to defeat them with a space force. But we already have a space force. It's called Solar Warden. And it's very sophisticated. We have very large spacecraft already traveling throughout the galaxy.
You don't say.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And that's in my book. We have been working on that for many years, mostly through the Navy, rather than the Air Force. It's been really a Navy program.
I believe it's comprised of several elite battle groups, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Gary McKinnon, I think you know about that story, about he hacked into a website in which we were talking about having admirals transferring from off-world colonies to spaceships. He hacked into it. And I think you know that story, don't you?
I am familiar with it. Do you have anything to add to that story that we haven't heard?
Well, you know, he didn't get taken. He was able to remain in England. We didn't succeed in having him sent to the United States, so he's still operating. But the point is that he was able to determine that we do have rather large spaceships, and this was known as early as 1989 when Ben Rich made the statement in his farewell address, president of the Skunk Works. I think many of your listeners may know about the Skunk Works, Lockheed Martin.
Oh yeah.
He said in his farewell speech, his retirement speech, he said, "We already have the ability to do anything you can already imagine we can do." He said, "We now can take E.T. home." He said, "But these things are locked up in secrets so deep that it would take an act of God to get them out. And that's because they're basically controlled by the Nazis, and the Nazis control the technology." So the point is, we do have the technology, and we do have very large spacecraft. And we are outside of the solar system already.
The implications of this secret space program make you wonder, like, why it is ineffective, you know, if they haven't identified the threat. And so is the threat the reptilians, or is the threat, like, another ET species? What do you think?
Well, the reptilians control Mars. I mean, the Nazis control Mars now. The Nazi colony on Mars is very sophisticated, and they control all traffic in and out of Mars. Essentially, Mars is a German planet at this point. So we had to make an arrangement with them to allow us to have a base on Mars, and we do. We have one. And they tolerate that because we're not a threat to them at this point. And from our Martian base, we travel throughout the solar system as well. We have large, very large craft. Anti-gravity craft traveling throughout the galaxy. But we're not able to start trying to dislodge the Nazi leadership at this point. That could happen. That could happen.
What are we waiting for?
Well, they control everything. We're not there yet. We don't have enough.
Will we ever be there?
Yes, we will.
Okay.
we will become the Star Trek generation eventually. Everything you've seen on Star Trek will be able to accomplish. We can already do transporting. We can already do. We can already go through portals, and we can already. Everything you've seen on Star Trek, we can do already, actually.
And so, why do we need the Dark Fleet to accomplish this if we can just teleport?
We don't need the Dark Fleet. They do. We don't control the Dark Fleet. It's a Nazi operation. It's not ours.
Well,
They do allow us to have a colony on Mars, however.
Don't they have those same capabilities or powers?
They absolutely do. They run the show. They control all of the...
It seems like a lot of wasted money and elbow grease, you know, building these craft if you can just teleport.
Well, that's a whole different story, yes.
Yeah.
And certain things cannot go through teleportation.
I guess. So there are some limitations. You know, you want to have more control of the situation.
Well, I think it was Henry Deacon. I don't know if you've heard of his name before or not.
I haven't.
Said, for small things, we use teleportation. For large things, we need spacecraft. So there you are.
Well, I think that sums it up. You certainly hit it right, the nail on the head, got right to the point with that, Len. Appreciate that. We talked a little bit about the super soldiers earlier, but what we did not talk about is the age regression and how they literally serve their time and then they are transported back to the time they were when they were taken.
It's truly amazing technology, and it's hard to believe. It sounds like science fiction, really. What they do is they abduct usually ex-military people, ask them to sign a contract. The contract states that they will have our use of that person for 20 years, and that person will age normally during that 20-year period. He will work for them on the moon and Mars in their colonies. And when they're through with that 20-year period, they have the ability to regress him back to the original point at which he was taken, physically, mentally, in every way. They wipe his memory clean so he doesn't remember anything that happened to him in that 20-year period, and he resumes his life here on planet Earth. They have that ability. They've had it for many, many years. Randy Kramer went through it. If you read my book, you know who Randy Kramer is, right?
Yeah, he's one of those super soldiers, but
That's
there are
right.
more.
That's right, there are. And I did mention 20 of them in my book in the beginning part of it. So how they do that, we're not really sure of how they do that. That's just one of their technologies. They have amazing technology. So once that person comes back into their original body and at their original age, the memories that they have stored from that 20-year adventure are suppressed. They have no access to them. But slowly but surely, a lot of these ex-super soldiers are able to retrieve those memories through the use of hypnosis and start to remember what happened to them. And Randy Kramer was one of those.
Super soldiers are no different than abductees. They have been taken because they're not given a choice in this matter, are they?
They're asked to sign a contract, so it is voluntary. They could say no. They could say no.
Well, if they say no, are they returned?
Yes. Yes. Okay. It's free will. There was a case of Tony Rodriguez in which he was not given a choice because he was basically just taken and enslaved, and they do that too.
Yeah, I actually sent myself a note after reading your book saying I have to get this guy on my program, so I'm going to try to do that because
he'd be amazing,
incredible. Can you tell us a little bit more about his story?
Well, apparently he insulted or had a problem with one of his classmates in school, and the classmate's father was an Illuminati. He told his father about the problem. His father came and saw Tony, and that very night he was abducted and taken off the planet and into the 20 and back program.
20
so he
years.
Had no choice. He had no choice.
Yeah, 20 and back is in 20 years.
20 years, yes, it's 20 years.
And enslaved, I think we talked about this in the early part of the interview, enslaved how?
Well, once they have you in their colony, they can do anything they want with you. They can control your mind. They control how you live, where you live, and that's exactly what happens. They have very large slave colonies throughout the solar system. And he was taken to one on Ceres, which is actually an asteroid. It's like a small planet, actually. It's in our solar system. And they have a mining operation there, and he worked there. He had, they put him to work there.
What were they mining?
I don't know. Some kind of precious metals. I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah. Who are some of the other super soldiers, briefly here?
Well, I have a list of them in the early part of the book. James Casbolt is another one. Max Spears is probably the most famous. He's well known, Max Spears. Max Spears died not too long ago.
I was just going to say that, but I didn't want to speak out of turn and say something died, without having looked it up.
But people are still in touch with him on the other side. And he's telling us a lot already just from the other side.
Like?
Well, some of the things that he's experienced and what happened to him. I think probably another one is Penny Bradley.
Yes.
I have a chapter on Penny Bradley.
Yes.
There's a woman named Ileana Kapulnik. She's an incredible person. She was on Mars for 50 years. Michael Relf, R-E-L-F-E, James Rink, Kevin Trimmel, Anthony Zender. These are only the ones I know about.
Why the 50 years? Was she more valuable than the others?
Yes, she was, because she was a language specialist. And she was brought to Mars to work with the language, because there are so many people that come through Mars, foreign people from all over the galaxy. They needed people that understood languages and could translate, and she was excellent at that, and that's what they did with her.
Amazing. Now, I understand that there was also some policy changes or some policy making as a part of this reptilian Nazi agenda. What kinds of policies were they making?
Now, when you say policy, are you talking political, governmental? What are you saying? What are you talking?
Exactly.
Well, of course, they originally wanted to set up fascism. We know that. That didn't work too well. And we won World War II physically. But they influence everything that goes on policy-wise. Remember, we discussed the Dulles brothers. One was the Secretary of State, and one was the head of the CIA. So they were in a position to make tremendous changes in policy, governmental and technically in every way.
Well, it is another fascinating subject that you write about. I think next is Planet Serpo. I started with Alien World Order, and now we have Dark Fleet. And so next it's going to be Planet Serpo. That's just all there is to it. I always find your work fascinating, and I'm fascinated that you have a website now, alien-secrethistory.com, which we already have linked up at my website, paranormalradio.com. So
okay,
click that
great
link, and all of Len's information is right there. Any parting words, sir?
Well, all my books are available on Amazon. I think you know that already. I have 4 books out there. And the only thing I could say is I want to just repeat something we discussed a little earlier.
Yeah, please do.
When I made the statement that what we have to do is raise our consciousness, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that that's the key to everything, because we have the ability to actually completely defeat the reptilians on this planet and get rid of them. Once we raise our consciousness to a certain point, there's nothing they can do any with us anymore. They can't control us anymore. So I just want to leave everybody with that thought. Anything you can do to raise your consciousness, to lift your mind up to a higher level, that's what we have to do. That's the key to the whole thing.
Well, and it actually might help us with what we're going through right now with this whole pandemic situation. Len, always fascinating to talk with you. I wish you the very best.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure as well. That's Len Kasten. Again, alien-secrethistory.com. The link in case you're driving around, which you shouldn't be because they're telling you to stay home. Just saying, unless you're an essential worker, and if you're doing that essentialness, then please keep on keeping on, because we need you keeping the world moving. But we've made it easy for you just to go to paranormalradio.com, get a link to the book, link to Lynn's website, and all that good stuff. I highly recommend it. It's not often that I actually get to finish books before we go on the air and do the program. But, of course, now I have all this time on my hands because I'm working from home. And so I can only do certain amount of activities so many hours a day before I absolutely go insane. And so I have to do something else. And one of those something else is picking up a book. And Len's books are certainly fascinating. In fact, because I'm trying to watch, you know, my pocketbook, I'm not going to be ordering the Planet Serpo book just yet. I think I'm going to go back and just reread Alien World Order because it was so good the first time that I read it. And then when the economy's a little bit better and we have a little bit more residual income, then I'll order the book. When we come back, as mentioned, a little bit more about the Illuminati and about the New World Order and whether or not it is a plot, COVID-19, to take over the world and continue the infiltration. This time it's not going to be the reptilians. It's going to be some of the most powerful figures in the world. I'm Jeremy Scott, and we'll be back.
Save your data and listen for free by calling 701-719-9703, courtesy of TalkStream Live.